Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Right Now Radio. I'm your host this evening, Ben Shockman. It's now about 1 minute past six, and we're having a little bit of background noise going on in here. Right Now Radio is the weekly human rights show which focuses on all the latest human rights news, events, and issues happening all around the world and indeed right here in Melbourne. Now, speaking of around the world, last week the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child handed down a very critical report in relation to Australia. It found basically that Australia is a good place for many children, but unfortunately not necessarily for all of its children. On tonight's show, we're going to be speaking with Frank Hitton, who's the CEO of Snake. Welcome to Right Now Radio, Frank.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks for having us.
Now, first of all, Snake, let's talk through that. The Secretariat of National Aboriginal and Islander Childcare.
Well done.
Have I got that right?
You
Excellent.
Have.
Now, Snake is the peak body that represents Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children around Australia.
Yep. We're an advocacy body, not a service provider. We do policy development and lobbying. We develop resources across the sector and try to consult as much as possible with our membership, which is in two areas, in the child welfare area, which is primarily child protection, and in the early years area, which is preschools primarily.
Wonderful. Now, stay tuned. A little bit later in the show, we're going to be covering, as usual, all the latest human rights news and events. And we're going to be catching up as well with Andre Dow, who's the managing editor of Right Now, just to check out a little bit what's about what's been going on with Right Now, which, as many listeners hopefully will know, is the magazine that is our, I guess, sister production, really, of Right Now Radio here. Now, Frank, we're very excited to have you in the studio with us. You've just returned from... It's been a bit of a whirlwind tour, really, but most recently from Geneva, where, as we mentioned at the top of the show, you attended the Committee on the Rights of the Child. Now, before we get into, or without trying to get into all of these boring acronyms and things about international treaties that Australia is a party to, can you tell us very briefly about the Convention on the Rights of the Child and what that important document is?
Well, essentially, and to keep it straightforward, it is a convention that outlines the rights of children. Our engagement, Snake's engagement, is primarily around Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children. The delegation was of about six people representing all Australian children and young people that spoke around a range of issues. The CRC, to use the acronym, is also a committee based that looks at or examines each country around the world roughly every 5.5 years considers their human rights record in terms of that particular convention. So we get a day and a half per country, roughly.
To cover all of the children's rights issues in Australia.
That's correct.
Right, so it's a periodic report, as you mentioned, yes. And Australia was last reviewed in 2005, and it was during this year that the most recent review took place. Now, what happens at the end of this process is that there's a series of recommendations that's made by the committee to Australia on what it needs to do to better comply with its obligations under the Convention on the Rights of the Child. Now, it's just handed down those recommendations. And I should say, firstly, I've read a lot of recommendations made by various UN human rights treaty bodies in relation to other conventions. I don't think I've ever seen, firstly, as comprehensive a list in terms of the broadness of the issues that it covers, but also the specificity of the recommendations that the committee's made. What were your, I guess, first impressions of the recommendations?
I'll just preface that response by saying they've been working on their report really for probably a better part of 18 months. So they've been to Australia, they've had various conversations with NGOs here in Australia. They then actually, at Geneva, the NGOs don't get to speak. They build a bunch of questions out of what they've already heard, and they then ask questions of the government. And the government is represented by fairly senior bureaucrats. My impressions were at the time that I thought, oh, they're not asking too many questions about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children, until the sum-up was given by the Special Rapporteur for Australia. And that was really quite specific and quite detailed, particularly in relation to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children. So I was very happy about that and thought, oh, we'll wait for the report to come out. Now, the report's just come out a few days ago. And it, as you say, is quite specific, it's quite comprehensive, it shows quite a lot of understanding about issues and is fairly highly critical of some issues, particularly around the Northern Territory intervention and the stronger futures follow-on from the NTER, the Non-Territory Emergency Response. Get used to acronyms. And then a whole range of other things to do with out-of-home care and why children are being taken away and the numbers they're being removed from families. And as a side, more children are being taken away from families now than when the Stolen Generations was going on. So that's really a bit scary, I would think, for most people to realise.
Absolutely. And we'll come to talking about some of those issues, those specific issues in detail in a moment. But I guess one thing that I just did want to ask you, one of the things that maybe we didn't explain as well, is that SNAKE is one of a range of organisations that has spent a lot of time providing resources to the committee to, I guess, brief them on what the issues are here in Australia. Yeah. What are your personal reflections on how effective that was, and what it was even like being in Geneva and interacting with the committee members? Was that something that, I mean, you've talked a little bit about how being able to see some of the questions that were asked at the time, but what's your overall impression of how successful that is?
Yep. Well, as I was saying before, I go with a certain amount of scepticism about most of these giant processes because they're so comprehensive and so big and all that. But I was extremely impressed and, you could say, blown away by the fact that there's so many people, and they're all volunteers, these committee members. They might get expenses paid, but they don't get salaries for it. Are prepared to sit and spend all that time because they did a number of countries, so they're there for 2 or 3 weeks. Reviewing countries' records. I was blown away by the fact that there is so much energy being put into holding governments accountable, firstly. And secondly, I was blown away by the fact that there is actually some sort of international watchdog that is actually trying to hold countries accountable. Now, how effective that is really dependent on people like your listeners as to whether they're going to do anything about it, because sitting in New York or Geneva or somewhere, they can't do a hell of a lot. To hold governments accountable. They'll come back in 5 years. It's actually in probably closer to 2020 before this committee will meet again around Australia. We'll have different governments. There'll be different people in different positions. So the whole game will be changed by then. So in the meantime, part of SNAKE's role is to try to create momentum and maintain momentum to keep pressure on governments about these recommendations. So on the one hand, I'm highly optimistic that all these things exist, and maybe in 100 years or 1,000, they'll actually be effective in a more comprehensive way.
Just that slow, incremental.
That's what it has to be. And it so depends on ordinary people participating. As I said earlier, democracy requires participation. If there isn't any participation, there is no democracy, only the title.
Absolutely. Now, it's 9 minutes past six, and if you've just tuned in, we're talking to Frank Hitton, who's the CEO of SNAKE, and we're speaking about the recent review of Australia by the Committee on the Rights of the Child. Now, these recommendations, Frank, you've just been talking about them, I guess, as being tools, so let's talk about how we can use some of them in a bit more detail. Another thing that struck me about the recommendations was that they're almost kind of two categories, if you like, of recommendations. Some of them focus very much on, I guess, what I'd describe as high-level sort of institutional type recommendations, things like participation in decision-making and things like that. And a lot of the other recommendations address a lot more of the specific issues, some of which you've already referred to. How important are some of those really high-level institutional recommendations, particularly with respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children?
Well, at the very core of those recommendations is that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people need to be at the centre of decisions being made about their communities and about their children. Now, that sounds, on the one hand, a very macro issue, but it actually translates into day-to-day life of people living in townships or living in the city or living wherever. Unfortunately, governments, regardless of which government, have top-down approaches. They like one-size-fits-all. They like to come up with a grand idea, and they then want it enforced, if you like, across whichever sector they're working in. That's never going to work with any community, but it's certainly not going to work with Aboriginal community. And, for example, the CRC also critiqued the policy, I think it's called SEAM, S-E-A-M, in the Northern Territory, whereby if children don't go to school, their parents will lose their welfare payments or percentage of their welfare payments. Apart from the obvious absurdity of taking money away from impoverished people, what does that actually mean for the child? Does that mean the child gets victimized at home even further from a family that isn't functioning very effectively because they've caused the loss of income? It's a top-down approach that doesn't respond to the issues that perhaps people are not functioning very effectively.
And just to try and unpack that a little bit, when you talk about a top-down approach, I guess there's a couple of concerns there. I mean, one is getting back to this theme, really, of participation in decision-making, or what a lot of people use as the term self-determination.
Yeah.
And that's obviously something that's very much at the heart of the way that yeah. Snake as an organisation operates yeah. as well.
Well, self-determination over the last few years has become kind of like swear words that we try to avoid because it's just a red rag to the bull of any government. So we talk about being responsible for designing, developing and delivering their own services or services to their own people. That could apply to any community, Italian people in Brunswick or, you know, people who live in Brighton, whatever nationality they might be or whoever we describe those people. So if people are designing, developing, delivering, then we have some chance of those people designing things that work. Now, where communities perhaps don't have a lot of expertise, for example, in dealing with bureaucracies and politicians and all those sort of university-educated skills that we need to manoeuvre and navigate through the system, then we have an obligation to provide people who have those skills so that the local people can use them as tools to achieve what they need in terms of writing up what they're saying. So it's, as you unpack it, it becomes a little bit more complex, but it's incredibly doable. Particularly if governments go for broad, for the want of a better word, performance indicators that say we must achieve this, this and this. Now here's some money, you go away and figure out how to do it. And that approach should be able to work and it should be just as accountable as what we're trying to do now, which is nitpick the detail of stuff, which means that many communities without all those English language skills and university skills and all that other stuff that the bureaucracy has are found wanting. Not necessarily because they don't know how to organise their lives, but because they cannot meet a set of standards that are purely arbitrary.
Mm. And certainly many of the recommendations were especially critical of Australia in terms of the lack yep. of adequate processes for yep. children to be able to participate meaningfully. Why is that so important for children? I mean, I guess it's a bit of a Dorothy Dixer, but it's probably important to come back and think about why these processes are really important yep. because at the end of the day we're talking about children here.
Yeah. Well, that children get a decent start in life should be self-evident, although it doesn't appear to be in government policy, although that rhetoric is there, but it doesn't appear to translate into action. If children have got a lifespan of, we'll keep away from the difference at the moment between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people in terms of lifespan, but if children have got another 40, 50, 60 years to live, then what happens now is critical to the quality of their lives and the cost of those lives if they're not very functional. So if we don't do sensible things with children now, we're going to pay for it in welfare payments and pay for it in jail costs and pay for it in drug and alcohol damage and pay for it in a whole range of ways. So on a purely pragmatic economic level, we need to be doing what can be done sensibly now. Now, to do that with children, you have to actually work with parents. You cannot work with 4- and 5- and 6-year-old kids directly in any meaningful way across the country. You have to engage parents, which means you have to engage those communities. So one of the quotes that I've got somewhere here is that we need to actually strengthen communities if we want to work effectively with children. And that will give children, and Aboriginal people traditionally have lived in groups, for the want of a better word, which means that kids are often brought up by different members of that group and brought up collectively. They're a collective responsibility rather than an individual responsibility. And that kind of, I hesitate to use the word culture, but that kind of way of being contrasts very sharply with a nuclear family way of being and a legal responsibility way of being that says, no, you are individually responsible. So if you're not functioning well, we'll take your kids away. It doesn't allow for, well, you're not functioning well at the moment, postnatal depression, who knows, whatever. Auntie Agnes is doing okay and she'll help out. Now, traditional communities all around the world before and still work that way. But somehow our laws and our bureaucratic systems don't cater for that at all, which means extremely high numbers of Aboriginal children are removed from their families.
And I guess what you're talking about there is fundamental cultural differences where you do get policies and laws that are developed and looked through the lens of, for want of a better term, but, you know, through white eyes and yep. judging black communities,
yep.
Which I guess comes back to that idea about why Aboriginal participation in the development of laws, policies yep. and practices is so crucial yep. to make sure that they're adequate and in the long yeah. term they're effective. It's 16 minutes past six, and we're speaking with Frank Hitton, the CEO of Snake. And I just maybe just as a to get a couple more issues in quickly, Frank, before we tie up, I just wanted to ask about any other areas that Snake focuses on where you saw some of the recommendations of the committee were particularly useful for some of the work that you're undertaking.
I think they reinforce the areas we already work in. So the child placement principle, in other words, keep children as much as possible with their own families and their own communities. They focused on that quite strongly. They talked about the closing the gap and how the most important part of closing the gap, or the best way to close the gap, is to actually give authority to people to run their own lives. They talked about a deputy commissioner. As people probably know, there's a children's commissioner has been okayed or approved, or whatever the right word is, sanctioned by the government.
In fact, the legislation passed earlier this week, so right. we now have the office of a national children's commissioner, which is excellent.
And I understand the government's moving as quickly as possible to fill it. Our argument has been that there needs to be some very strong role for focus, I should say, on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children, because that is the largest group of disadvantaged people. The statistic somewhere, something like 31% of people in out-of-home care, in other words, being removed from their families, is Aboriginal, off a population base that is probably, you know, it's 2.5 for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people across the country. For children, they have a much higher percentage of people who are children. So it's a population base of, let's say, 4% of all children. 31% are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander. So it's very, very disproportionate. Now, all of that not only costs money now, it's going to cost money in 20 or 30 years' time if those people are not treated well and don't grow up with self-esteem. And what Aboriginal people tell us is the best way for those kids to grow up healthy is to have strong connections to culture and to understand their family and their culture and so on. So that's an example of bad decision-making now will cost us all for the rest of those children's lives.
Absolutely. Now, just as a final question, Frank, we talked at the beginning how this is a periodic review of Australia, and one of the things that the committee was particularly... I guess a bit almost pissed off about was the fact that there's been very little development since these recommendations were made 7 years ago in 2005. Yeah. The million-dollar question, what's kind of going to happen? Where to next? How do you sort of envisage Australia's going to be in another 5 or 8 years? And I guess fundamentally, what do we need to do to get there?
Well, some of the recommendations have been okayed, like the Children's Commissioner, the very last, last second.
At the last moment, yeah.
But others, like the Aboriginal Child Placement Principle, like self-determination and so on, have been largely not been implemented. What happens next, I guess, is that we need, as with many of these issues, the environment and refugees and a whole lot of other issues, we need community to engage in this stuff, even in a cursory way of signing those petitions that go everywhere, you know, and we need to increase the numbers of people who are prepared to look at those things and engage a little bit, even superficially with some of those issues, like on a matter of principle, even if they don't understand the detail. The next time the committee meets, Australia is going to be putting in two reports, one after the other. And so the next meeting of the CRC committee won't be until probably around 2019, 2020, as I said earlier. So there's a whole range of things that are going to happen in that time. What's going to happen domestic, apart from all the different people are going to be around, people like me probably won't be around, in an activist role with this stuff. So it requires continuity, it requires people to still pick this thing up, and we probably will have changes of government all over the country. Now, some of the changes of government have been quite good in relation to the policy shifts that we've seen in terms of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, even if in other areas we would be unhappy with what they're doing. At a federal level, from my point of view, the present government isn't the worst possible offender in relation to many of these issues. And although we're not quite clear where they're going, a potential Minister for Indigenous Affairs recently made some extremely, in my opinion, stupid comments about Aboriginal people all being pissed anyway, and that kind of stuff that's straight out of the 70s or 40s or 20s or perhaps last century. And he made them publicly, and they were reported in a paper in Canada. That's the only way I got it, because it wasn't reported here. So what on earth we're going to do if that becomes a prevailing view is that we're going to suddenly leap backwards by 30 years. And again, only the voting power of citizens is going to stop that. Snake can do a whole range of things, and we will. I was in Canberra on yesterday and on I'm in Sydney on Tuesday and I'm again up there next week. So we can do a certain amount, but we're a small organisation. We need the force of a whole range of people to get engaged.
As you referred to earlier, a bit of participatory democracy.
Absolutely.
Well, Frank Hitton, thanks very much for coming in to join us to talk about the Children's Rights Committee Review of Australia.
Thanks, Ben.
That was Frank Hitton, who's the CEO of SNAIC, the Secretariat for National Aboriginal and Islander Childcare. Coming up in just a moment, we've been joined by the lovely Evelyn Tadros in the studio. We're going to be talking about all the latest human rights news of the week.